For the past couple of weeks, we've been celebrating Christmas. And last week, we launched it with our Christmas exchange. And then we came back with our Hoboken Grace Kids Concert. And I kind of began to talk to you a little bit about it last week, but I want to kind of build on it. And it is this idea of home. I don't think there's any holiday that captures home like Christmas. I don't think there's any holiday where you think about home the way that you do with Christmas. And it's a little bit ironic to me, because when you actually come to the story of Christmas, it's not actually a story about home. I want to take you back to the passage that tells the story the best. It's written by an individual named Luke, and Luke traveled with the eyewitnesses to Jesus' resurrection, and he was incredibly educated, and so he was trying to put together the most accurate possible collection of what it was that took place in Jesus' life and how this happened. And as you read through his letter, you'll see that he's very focused in on history and, okay, when did this happen, and tying it into what was happening around that time. And as he writes to us, he gives to us the most detailed version of Jesus' birth, of what we celebrate with Christmas. We find it in Luke chapter 2. I want to take you there this morning, because I think as you read through it, you see it's kind of ironic that Christmas is so much about home. Luke chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. This was the first census taken when Quirinius was governor of Syria." Again, this is one of these things that Luke does. He's trying to tie it in. He says, no, you... And he's actually writing to someone who's very educated and has a great amount of authority, and he includes these things because he's like, listen, you remember when this happened? Well, that's actually when Jesus was born. He said, "All returned to their own ancestral towns to register for this census, and because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. He took with him Mary, his fiancée, who is now obviously pregnant. And while they were there, the time came for her baby to be born. She gave birth to her first son, her first child, a son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them." It's interesting because when we talk about Christmas, when we celebrate Christmas, when we think about Christmas, we think home. But when you look at the actual story, it wasn't about home. It's actually at its core a story of someone who didn't have a home. A couple that had to leave home. And then even as they arrive in Bethlehem, there seems to be no home for them. And when you look at the story, it's remarkable. And we've kind of, to be honest with you, we've kind of messed this story up a little bit. We've kind of messed up the picture a little bit, because we have these really cute nativity scenes, and inside of these cute nativity scenes, there are these two quiet sheep over here, and then there's these two really nice donkeys over here. I have to tell you, just really quickly, I grew up on a farm. There are no nice donkeys. They are all asses, every one of them. There are no nice donkeys, But we have these nativity scenes, and we have this manger that Jesus is in, and it looks like something that Joanna Gaines would use to decorate one of her houses and reclaimed wood. We've made it into this kind of cute, very, very, very nice thing, as opposed to what it actually was, which was a couple who's about to have their first child. They've had to leave home. There is no home. And then as the baby's born, he's laid in this manger, which which really is just the trough that the animals ate out of. And if you know animals, they're not all that careful of what they eat out of and what they do other things in. And as I was reading through this story this past year, it just struck me. For the first time, it really struck me the fact that these are first-time parents. Now, first-time parents are interesting people. And I was thinking through this experience for them, and then also thinking through my own experience as a first-time parent. And some of you who know me, you know that I'm just a little obsessive-compulsive. And I remember when my first son was born, the very first thing that I did, I went out and bought like a 24-pack of Purell. If you've ever visited first-time parents, you know what this experience is like. By the time you leave, your hands are just dry. They're just shriveled up because of the fact that you've put on so much Purell. And that was me, exactly. I know what that's like. And you would get off the elevator in our building, and I'd have Purell for you there. We don't want to take any chances. And then there was at the door. And I'd like to be able to hold the baby. Well, how about you wash your hands, and then we'll do a little more Purell. And let's give it some time to dry. It takes time to work. It doesn't happen automatically. And we'll make sure that this kid is safe. And then you imagine this couple who is bringing their child into the world for the first time, and this is their situation, this is their scenario, and you see, it's very different than what we really capture with our little nativity scenes. It must have been terrifying. And even when you look at the extended story of Jesus' family, you see that shortly after this, Herod discovers that Jesus has been born, and Jesus' family has to flee to Egypt. Not only did they have to leave their home once, but now they're having to leave their home again, and you see at the beginning of Jesus' story, and really even as Jesus' story continues, there isn't a lot of home. Jesus at one point says this about himself. It's found later in Luke's letter in chapter 9. It says, "But Jesus replied, 'Foxes have dens to live in and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place even to lay his head.'" And I think a lot of times we hear him say that, or if you've heard it before, if you've read it before, we think he's talking about that moment, but I think it more captures his entire story. From the beginning, there really hasn't been a lot of home. It's just a little ironic. And then you dig a little deeper into the story. You look at what Jesus says about himself, and you look at what he's taught us about why it is that he came, and you realize that the story of Christmas isn't about coming home at all. At its very core, and in a very deep level, the story of Christmas is about leaving home. John, who's actually if you read through John's letter, John was actually the closest individual to Jesus. If you really want to know Jesus' heart, you read through John's letter, because John was Jesus' best friend, really, and he's trying to help people to understand Jesus' story. And he says this when he's talking about Jesus coming. He says, "So the Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and forgiveness, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son." But as he's speaking about the beginning of it, he says, no, he said he had to leave home and become one of us. Philippians 2 says it this way. It says, "Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being." The story of Christmas isn't actually about coming home at all. It's about leaving home. It's about the one who left home. It's the beginning of a mission, a rescue mission, really. The story of the one who decided that rather than clinging to the home that he had and clinging to all that he had, that he was going to strike out. Jesus talks about it this way. He tells a story that kind of captures what it is that he's doing and what he's about. And he says this. He says, if a man has 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, what will he do? Won't he leave the 99 others on the hills and go out to search for the one that is lost? And if he finds it, I tell you the truth, he will rejoice over it more than over the 99 that didn't wander away. Jesus says, if you really want to understand my story, it's kind of captured this way. It's about leaving home. And what we celebrate with Christmas, ultimately, it's the moment where he decided to leave home in order to bring you home. Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is like this. It's like a shepherd. He realized that someone's missing, and he says, I have to go get them. And so he decides to leave home in order to be able to bring you home. In order, really, for you to be able to experience the home that you were created for. Now let me explain something to you in that, because I think that there's something that God teaches us about our relationships here on earth that we don't necessarily understand. There's a point in Ephesians where Paul's writing to the church at Ephesus, and he's talking to them about home, and he's talking to them about family, and he's talking to them about the way that we relate to one another and the way that we love one another. And in the midst of that, specifically as he's talking about marriage, he says something really interesting. It's found in Ephesians chapter 5. It says this, as the scriptures say, a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. He's talking about marriage, and he's inside this passage, he's working through all these different relationships inside the home, but in this specific time, he's talking about marriage, and then he says this. He says, this is a great mystery. And then listen, this is a remarkably powerful statement. He says, but it is an illustration of the way that Christ and the church are one. Now, I've heard this passage a lot in my life, and I've interacted with a lot of different people about this passage in my life as well. And I find that we typically misunderstand what it is that he's saying here and what he's trying to help them to understand here. Because for some reason, almost every time I see someone encounter this passage, they think, oh, okay, Christ in the church, well, that's an example of how to be able, or that's an illustration of how to be able to love your wife, of how to be able to love your spouse, of how to be able to love someone else. And it's true that we learn from that, but when you look at the passage, he says something really interesting. He says you have to understand something about marriage. He says marriage was actually given as an illustration of what you were created to experience with God. He doesn't say that God gave his life as an illustration of what you were meant to experience in your marriage. No, he flips it. We typically look at it backwards. He says, no. This is actually, it's an illustration of what you can experience with him. And he's teaching us something profound here. He's saying you have to understand something. What you experience here and what you experience in relationship here, it's actually an illustration of what it is that you were created to experience with him. And this is important because the illustration is, the imperfect. An illustration is something that you're trying to help someone understand something that's primary, and so you tell them an illustration. It's something that doesn't quite get it right, but it will help you to understand it. It will help you to be able to see it. And he says you have to understand something, that what you know of home here, it's It's actually just given so that you can kind of see and understand what it is that you were supposed to experience with him, of what you're supposed to experience in him. You see, Jesus came for you to know the home that you were created for. And whatever you've experienced of home up until this point, no matter how great it is, it's really just an imperfect illustration of what you can find in him. I was blown away by this over the last couple of weeks as I've been spending time with it. Because a couple of weeks ago, I had an amazing moment. My wife and I decided to go out to celebrate the end of our fall series here at Hoboken Grace, and we took our boys out, and we went out to eat, and we were just celebrating all that God had done. And it was kind of a surreal moment for me because my second son, who has Down syndrome, he's now in an inclusive classroom, and it's been amazing the impact that it's had on him because he's talking so much more. Actually, he used to talk a lot. We just didn't know what he said. So we're understanding him a lot more. And I remember we were sitting at this table, and we were celebrating and just enjoying being together as a family. And he kind of interrupted us, and he told a joke. But for the first time, really, and he's 7 years old, but for the first time, he told a joke and all of us got it. And my boys are laughing and my wife's laughing and I look down at him and he's just beaming. And I sat there and I was like, this is amazing. And for me, as this is happening, it's like I'm meeting my son for the first time. And I sat there and I was like, oh wow, my third son. Parenting's kind of like that in general. I tell people when they're stepping into parenting is like, it's like losing someone and meeting someone new every year. At the beginning, it's like losing someone and meeting someone new every week. But it can be very difficult because that person's not coming back, but you've met this new person now. And I sat there and I was taking this in. I was like, man, this is incredible. And then even this past week, my son, because the new school, he's trying to adjust to it, and so he's trying to learn the rules, and he's not a great rule follower. But he has this chart, and this week he had two perfect charts in a row. And my boys, they called me after school, and my wife called me, and they're just going crazy, and they're celebrating, and Dad, he got two perfect charts. It's amazing. And my youngest yells out, I think he can get four. I was like, four? What? Not five? Like, let's not set the expectation too high, Dad. Not a perfect week, but four, I think he can get there. And I sat there, and in both of these moments, they're just amazing experiences of home. And I kept coming back to this passage and just realizing, wait, as great as this is, as amazing as this is, it's just a shadow. It's an imperfect illustration. Of what I was created to experience with him. Jesus didn't just come so that you could have the imperfect illustration. He came for you to know the home that you were created for. And there's something inside of all of us that craves that. Even if your experience of home was quite an imperfect illustration, there's still something inside of us that craves it. As a matter of fact, sometimes when when our experience of home was broken, we crave and long for it even more. Not because we've lost something, but because you're created for something. It's at the core of who you are that you were created to know home and to have home. And Christmas is about the one who left home so that you could find that, so that you could know that. And God says, I want to be your home. Because if you've ever experienced home, you know it's not about a place, is it? It's about people. The place without the people, it's not home at all. God says, I want to be your home. I want to be your people. For you to know it and to live it. Moses experienced this. Moses is an ancient leader in the nation of Israel, and he says this about God in Psalm 90. He says, Lord, throughout all the generations, well, you have been our home. And Jesus left his home because he wanted for you to experience that with him. And Jesus has stepped into our lives and said, listen, if you'll invite me. We talked about this passage a lot this fall. I stand at the door and knock. If you'll open the door, I'll come in and I'll make my home with you. I want for you to know home, and I don't want you for you to just know home occasionally. I want for you to live it. I want for it to be a constant for you that you know and experience home. And it's amazing, almost every time I talk to someone about this, that there's something inside of us, we crave it. That there are very few people who hear this and are like, oh, I don't really want that. But there are a lot of things that keep us from it. For some of you, you're hearing this for the very first time, that Jesus came for you to know home, that God would care about that in your life at all. But many times when I share this with people for the first time, there are all these things in the way. And we talked last week about how God has reconciled you to himself, that there's nothing that keeps you from coming home, that you can come home at any time without hesitation. Let me ask you something. I asked the third service this last week, and I want for us to sit with it a little while longer, and that question is this: what is it that keeps you from coming home? For those of you who are here and hearing this for the first time, what is it that would keep you from coming home? Right now, as we're talking about this, and Jesus says, no, I want to make my home in you. And what is it that would keep you from that? I think there are a lot of different things in our life. For some of us, it's that I just don't know. I don't know if I believe it. It's interesting when you read through Matthew and Mark and Luke and John's letters. You almost never find someone who actually believed Jesus, and that's how the journey began. There are very few people who actually came up to Jesus and are like, you know what, I think that you're God, and I think that you've come to be able to rescue me, and I think that you've come to change everything in my life. That's not how their journey began at all. But Jesus didn't require that to start the journey, did he? He just said, come on, come follow me and hang out with me. And the more that they did that, the more they began to realize, oh my goodness, it's actually true. Don't let the fact that you have doubts keep you from coming home. Everybody who comes home has doubts. For others, it's, I don't have it all together. As a matter of fact, in the first service, I asked a question and someone answered it in the back. It scared me.
He yelled out from the back. He said, I'm not there yet. Jesus doesn't welcome anybody home because they're there yet. If you could get there, then he wouldn't have had to come for you. But he knew you couldn't get there. So he came for you. As we talked about last week, we've been reconciled to God. You've been reconciled to God. I don't care who you are, where you've been, what you've done. You were reconciled to God through Jesus on that cross. Now you can reject it and walk away from it if you want. But make no mistake about it. You can come home. You can come home without hesitation. Let me switch it a little bit and ask those of you who've come home before, what is it that keeps you from coming home? For some of us, we kind of drop in occasionally. But Jesus didn't come for us to drop in occasionally. As a matter of fact, one of the most profound things about Jesus is that after Jesus, there is no more temple. Why is there no more temple? Because God's Spirit wasn't content to live in a building where people drop by occasionally. He wanted to make his home in you so that you could be with him always and forever, no matter what, no matter where. But what is it that keeps you from coming home? Is it busyness? Are you scared that maybe he started to count your wrongs against you again? What is it? He left home so that you could know and experience and find the home that you were created for. And my invitation to you today, for those of you who've never come home, is this. I just invite you to come to him and engage him in this conversation and just ask him, Jesus, if it's actually true that I just ask you to, show me that. I want to, if you can bring me home, I want to come home. I want to begin to engage this conversation with you. And in preparing for today, I thought about all the different things that keep us from coming home. And I thought, well, you know, maybe we'll walk through each of these things. But I don't have a lot of confidence in my ability to convince you to come home. But I do have a lot of confidence in his love for you. And here's what I believe. If he left heaven, to bring you home, I believe if you'll come to him this morning and say, I want for you to make your home in me. If you'll come to him this morning and say, I want to know that home. I don't know if I believe it all, and I don't know, but I want, if it's possible, I want for you to show me. He left heaven for you. I have all the confidence in the world that the one who left heaven will continue to pursue you. So I want to invite you to engage him in that conversation. The way that's going to work is the band's going to come back out, and as they come back out, I'm just going to lead us in prayer, and we're going to go back into kind of another silence time, and it's just going to be time for you to be able to, maybe for the first time, to engage Jesus in this conversation. Ask him to make his home in you. Ask him to lead you to that. To be honest about where you are on this journey. And, or maybe for you, it's to acknowledge the fact that you've You've allowed busyness to keep you from the home that you can experience every day, at any point, anywhere. And maybe for the first time in a long time, or maybe for the first time in a short while, for you to be able to be home with Him. To be home with Him. To recognize the beautiful truth that the Spirit of God, that when you decide to follow Jesus, the Spirit of God has made His home in you. And to be home with Him. I'll give you a little time to do that, and then I'll bring us back together in prayer. Will you pray with me? Father, how remarkable the things that we speak of are too great to comprehend. That you left home, that you eventually went to that cross for the first time, left for the first time, were disconnected from your Father. That all of that beginning that Christmas morning, that all of that was so that your Spirit could make its home in us. That we could experience the home that we were created for. Father, I pray for those who are experiencing this for the first time that they would bring their doubts and their fears, that they would experience the most beautiful thing about you, Jesus, that you welcome them, and I pray that they begin the journey home with you today. I pray for those who, maybe because of the busyness of life or lies that have crept up in their life, those who've just been kind of occasionally stopping by home, maybe those who continue to believe that you made your home in a church or a building or something like that, as opposed to the reality that you've come to make your home in us. I pray that this would be the beginning, and specifically this Christmas season, that this would be a time where they would know and begin to grow in their experience of that home with you. And so, Father, we pray. Father, I thank you that we can experience we can experience this with you, that we can experience being home with you. At any time, in any place. And again, I just pray that over the next couple of weeks, as we walk through this season, as we're reminded over and over and over again of home, that we would take the time to be home with you and experience the beautiful, amazing, powerful relationship that you came, that you left heaven for us to know. In Jesus' name.